All right, today is Thursday, January 9th. We're going to start with endocrine system, page 3 in the course pack. So when you left Bio 210, you probably were talking about the nervous system as the very last topic that you covered. And this course starts with endocrine system. They may seem completely unrelated, but actually they're quite related. So when you think back about the nervous system from Bio 210, you probably talked about things like neurotransmitters. Okay, you probably talked about the autonomic nervous system and the somatic nervous system and all that good stuff. Can you remind me what a neurotransmitter does?
Sends signals between neurons.
Good. Sends signals between neurons. So it's kind of like a messenger, right? Very, very fast-acting messenger, but nonetheless, it carries a message from one nerve cell to a next nerve cell. Or maybe that neurotransmitter tells a muscle cell to do something like contract. So neurotransmitters are kind of like messengers. They're very fast, right? Because they're between two cells communicating. Hormones are kind of the same way, but it's how they get to their targets that makes them slower. Do you know how the endocrine system circulates its hormones? Bloodstream, good, yeah, bloodstream. So obviously the intention by sending your message through the bloodstream is not immediate. Okay, so let me put it to you this way. If I want to communicate with a friend and I need an answer within the next 2 minutes, I send them a text message, right? Okay, that's a fast communication like the nervous system. If I really don't need a response, maybe for the next couple of weeks, I can send snail mail. That's how the endocrine system operates. So the endocrine system functions are not something that we necessarily need immediate response with, although they can be immediate responses. It's just that they're slower acting. They're oftentimes occurring over a longer period of time. So can you think of some things in your body that is controlled by hormones?
Ovulation.
What's that?
Ovulation.
Ovulation for females, good. What's that?
Pituitary gland,
good. Yeah, that controls a whole bunch of our organs and other endocrine glands. What happens to teenagers?
Puberty,
yep. So now we have ovulation in females, we have body changes that take place, you know, as a teenager going through puberty. So we know that reproduction is largely controlled by hormones. Hormones that come from the brain, actually. Okay, so body growth, reproduction, blood sugar regulation, blood calcium regulation, ions in your bloodstream like potassium and sodium, all regulated by hormones. So, of course, they're going to be traveling in the bloodstream. Their actions can be short-term. They can also be long-term. And in case point, let's talk about body growth. So how big are babies when they're born? Little, right? 20 inches maybe, okay? So it takes, say, 10, 15, even maybe up to 18 years for you to grow to your final height, and that's all hormonal driven. So there's another case of a long-term action for a hormone, something like growth of your bones. All right, so we did talk about neurotransmitters. They do communicate between neighboring cells. They're really fast-acting because their command is to bring about a response immediately. Hormones work in a similar way. It's just that they're circulated how? Bloodstream, right. Hormones are circulated in the bloodstream. Just wanted to clarify different types of glands. Back in Bio 210, you may have heard of endocrine or exocrine glands and maybe not given them a second thought. Exo and endo as prefixes give us a great clue. What is the exo prefix?
Outside,
right. So what kinds of glands release substances to the exterior of your body? Sweat, oil, tears, even mammary glands release something to the external surface. So these glands that are secreting or excreting onto the external surface of your body are exocrine in nature. They're typically going to have this tubing. We call it duct work. Not quack quack ducts, but tubing. And of course, endocrine glands don't have that tubing. because those hormones travel via the bloodstream. We don't need a tube. All we need is for those hormones to travel from the gland tissue into the bloodstream by diffusion. So how does diffusion work? High to low concentration, so we just diffuse it out in the bloodstream and let it circulate. Okay. All right, so these are our major endocrine glands. These, of course, release hormones which circulate in the bloodstream. And over the next about 2.5 weeks, we're going to talk through these endocrine glands, starting with pituitary in the brain. The pineal is also in the brain. Not labeled in this picture is also a very important component. It's the hypothalamus. And then we'll talk through thyroid, thymus, adrenal glands, pancreas, and then, of course, gonads, which are ovaries or testes. So we have a lot here going on, and really the focus is going to start with our pituitary and the relationship with the hypothalamus. All right, so if you happen to have your course pack handy, let's start with letter A. What is letter A on your picture? Good, that pineal gland. All right, so letter A is that pineal gland. Letter B is posterior what?
Pituitary,
good. Letter B is posterior pituitary. Letter C is anterior pituitary. Letter C is anterior pituitary. All right, so what is letter D?
Thyroid.
Thyroid, good. Notice it's around the trachea. Letter D is thyroid, and letter E is thymus. Notice it's further down. It's actually kind of underneath the sternum in the chest area. Those two are commonly confused if you don't really pay attention to where it's located. Thyroid around the trachea, thymus a little lower in the chest. Okay, so D, thyroid, E, thymus. How about letter F? Adrenal cortex, good. You could also just say adrenal glands, good. Looks like the pancreas is floating in space. It's really not. But that would be letter G, pancreas. All right, H are ovaries. H, ovaries, and I, testes. Do y'all have any questions on that first page, page 3? Top of page 4, let's talk about hormones and a definition for them. We consider hormones to be chemical messengers. They're different from neurotransmitters because they do travel through the bloodstream to their target areas. So in Bio210, you probably talked about bones and how bones grow. You may have heard of growth hormone. And growth hormone targets the bones and tells them to grow longer. In fact, growth hormone targets most cells of the body, but where you really see the growth take place is in those bones. So we would say bones are a target area for growth hormone. We can talk about other hormones. We can talk about things like, say, estrogens for females. For a girl going through puberty, estrogens would target certain tissues in her body, fatty tissues, for instance, or breast tissue. So there are cells that have receptors for these hormones. Sometimes hormones affect a lot of cells in our bodies. We would say they are all targets of that hormone. But if you don't happen to have a receptor for that hormone, you're not a target for it. So that hormone has no effect on you if you're not a target of that particular hormone. All right, so let's talk about how hormones talk to their target cells. First thing we need to know, go ahead. Question? Nope, okay. First thing we need to know is that there's two types of hormones. They're classified as protein-based or amino acid-based. And they're classified as steroids, which, just a reminder, steroids are lipids, they're fats. Okay, so we're going to talk about two classifications of hormones. Hormones are either protein or amino acid based, or they're considered to be steroids, which are lipid based, that's fat based. The goal of hormones is to communicate with their target cells, and target cells have to have a receptor. And so that's kind of where we're heading with this, is how do you talk to your target cells? All right, so if I had a dime for every time I said back in Bio210, we'd be good to go by the time this course is done, right? So in 210, you probably talked about plasma membrane structure, and you may have learned that the plasma membrane has hydrophobic and hydrophilic regions. Those phospholipids that make up the bilayer of the membrane have heads that orient out and tails that orient inward. What are those tails afraid of?
Water.
Afraid of water, right. So we call those tails hydrophobic tails. So that's something to kind of keep in mind, is that we know that water-based items can't travel through. And how do water and fat molecules get along?
Not well.
So if water can't travel through, that actually means that fat molecules can travel through. So the interior of the membrane is hostile and doesn't like those water molecules, but it's welcoming to fatty molecules that can travel through that bilayer. So that's something to think about. When we mention that these hormones are either protein or lipid-based, well, if they're lipid-based, they can go right through that membrane. Hey, if they were water-based, no go, right? Because water, of course, we don't want to have traveling through that phospholipid bilayer. So we now know that steroid-based hormones like testosterone, estrogen, aldosterone, cortisone, travel right through that membrane because the tails hate water, but they love fat. So those fatty molecules, those steroid hormones, travel right through the membrane and into the interior of your cell. Proteins are a different story. Proteins are typically really big. So we don't necessarily want a protein traveling through the phospholipid bilayer. What might happen to your bilayer?
Burst,
yeah. It'd be like sending a baseball through a window, right? So we don't want to rupture this cell. We don't want to destroy that membrane. So proteins are actually going to stay on the outside and send their message to the inside by a messaging system. So just want to remind you that we talked about proteins not wanting to travel through the membrane. They're too big. But steroids can. Why can a steroid travel directly through? The tails, yeah. If the tails like you, you're golden. You come right on through that membrane. If the tails are afraid of you, you don't get to come through. And of course, if you're big, like a protein-based hormone, you have to stay on the outside. So what I'm actually talking to you about is this. These are two methods that hormones use to talk to their target cells. All right, so we have two ways to do this. We have a secondary messenger system. That's how proteins communicate with their cells. And we have a direct gene activation mechanism. That's how lipid-based hormones talk to their target cells. Okay, so let me make this point. In order for a hormone to talk to a cell, that cell must have a receptor. Okay, so it's kind of like this. If you want to talk to a friend and you want to call that friend or text that friend, what must they have? They got to have a phone, right? No phone, no communication. Likewise, if you're a target of one of these hormones, then you have to have a receptor. If you don't have a receptor, there's no conversation that's going to be had. So let me walk you through secondary messenger system first. So proteins are big. They're not going to be allowed to just bust their way into the cell. Proteins are so large that they have to stay outside the cell. They're not invited to come in. So in order to communicate with this cell, where should the receptor be? On the outside of the cell or on the inside of the cell? Outside, right, because if you're a big protein and you're not allowed to come in, your receptor has to sit on the outside of the cell. So you'll notice here comes a hormone. This is epinephrine or adrenaline. It's a protein. It's big. It cannot bust through that plasma membrane. And right there on the cell surface sits a receptor. You'll notice that the cell and its receptor have a pretty nice fit. That's because it's a lock and key fit. This hormone doesn't fit in just any old receptor site. That receptor site is made to fit that particular hormone. So it is a very specific type of receptor site for that hormone. Well, you notice when this receptor is binding that hormone, all of this machinery gets turned on inside the cell. We're not going to focus on everything here. We're going to look at something here called a second messenger. So let me put it to you this way. You ever go ring a friend's doorbell and you hear chaos inside and you know they're home and you stand there at the door for a few minutes and you're like, well, I know they're in there. Do I ring the doorbell again? They heard you at the door ringing, right? You're buzzing the doorbell. You hear all the chaos taking place inside. Finally, somebody comes and says, hey. But what's happening when you ring the doorbell is you've turned on this machinery inside the house. And so the machinery we're going to focus on is the second messenger. That's the person who says, hey, doorbell rang, it's your friend, they want you to come out and play. I know that's why they're at the door. And so there's this conversation going on inside the house. The person who's doing the conversation is your second messenger. So the second messenger says, hey, doorbell rang. The messenger says, do this, whatever it is. Make mitosis happen. Make an enzyme work faster. Make the cell go to sleep. Whatever the case may be, whatever we want that cell to do, the first messenger rings the doorbell, binding with that receptor, and the second one is the one called TAMP that turns on the activity inside the cell. Okay, so there's a two-messenger system here. Is your hormone the first messenger or the second messenger? It's your first messenger, right? And which binds the receptor, your first or your second messenger?
First.
Your first. So your hormone's your first messenger. It binds the receptor on the cell. It's like ringing that doorbell, okay? And then inside the cell, all this machinery starts working. And what molecule behaves as your second messenger? CAMP. Yeah, right there. C-A-M-P stands for cyclic AMP. You've heard of ATP, right? This is a form, lower form, called adenosine monophosphate. We'll call it CAMP. That sounds better, right? Okay? So CAMP is your second messenger. It'll turn on a hormone, or rather an enzyme like protein kinase. How do you know that's an enzyme?
ASC.
ASC, that's right. So like I mentioned, once the hormone binds with the receptor, the second messenger turns on the activity inside the cell on its behalf, and we turn on an enzyme there, that cell may undergo faster mitosis. It may undergo making proteins. It's going to do whatever that message is to that cell on the inside. So as long as that hormone is docked out here on that receptor site, that machinery is running on the inside of the cell. Okay? If you want the cell to stop doing whatever, what do you have to do to that hormone? Close it. Yeah, get rid of it, right? Because as long as the hormone is sitting there ringing the doorbell, this machinery is going to run inside your cell. You ever heard of alpha blockers, beta blockers, calcium blockers? Blockers are like child safety plugs, you know, like you put in the outlets. They literally fit in that receptor site, and they say, ha ha, hormone, you can't come here. We block in this whole thing off. So when the hormone comes along looking for its receptor site, there's no way for it to bind. So it just keeps on bumbling along, doesn't bind with that particular target cell. So there's no change that will happen when you've got a blocker sitting in one of those receptor sites. So let me ask you this. Will the second messenger do anything if that receptor site is empty? What does it take to tell the second messenger to do something? First messenger, right. First messenger has to tell that cell by plugging into that receptor site that, hey, second messenger, now it's time to do your job inside. So why do you need the second messenger? Because the first messenger is stuck where? On the outside. And if it just sits outside, we have to have a way to tell the inside of the cell, this is what we need you to do, without physically coming into the inside of the cell. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, so ringing the doorbell, listening to the activity inside of a house, that's kind of like what's happening. You're ringing the doorbell as your first messenger. Mom inside the house says, hey, Sammy's at the door, he wants to play. That second messenger inside the house is working on your behalf. So what kinds of hormones use a second messenger system? Proteins. Because they are large and they cannot squeeze through your phospholipid bilayer, so they're stuck out there. Let's talk about fatty molecules like steroid-based hormones. By the way, this is just a handful that operate by a steroid mechanism. Most of your hormones work by that previous one, that secondary messenger. Steroids are things like sex hormones, estrogen, testosterone. You're going to learn also about cortisone and cortisol, aldosterone. So it's just a handful that operate by this second or this direct gene mechanism. So let's go back for a moment. All right, so how do steroids behave? Do they have to dock on the outside of your cell, or can they come right straight on through?
Pass on through.
Pass on through, right?
Express pass.
Yeah. Come on in. So if you've got a neighbor and a friend that you know really well, maybe it's a family member that lives next door, you probably don't knock. You just don't ring the doorbell. You just go in the house, right? Okay, you have that express pass to come on in. That's how steroid hormones work. They say, hey, we fit through the phospholipid bilayer. We're not docking outside. We're just going to make ourselves at home. And you'll notice they come right on in the cell, and they really make themselves at home. They come on into the nucleus of the cell. Why is the nucleus a big deal? Your control center. It's your DNA. I mean, this is like going into the bank vault and saying, hey, I'm here. You know, I just walked right in the front door, right on in. That is the control center of the cell. That's a big deal to be able to walk into that cell, into that nucleus. And you'll notice this time the receptor sits right here inside the nucleus. And when that hormone binds the receptor, they actually turn on DNA transcription, and then you'll notice down here is translation. What are transcription and translation part of? Protein synthesis. So right there, you come right into the nucleus, you turn on protein synthesis, and this cell immediately starts making some proteins. So it's bold. This steroid-based hormone comes into your cell, binds the receptor in the nucleus, and tells the cell, start protein synthesis now. So testosterone builds muscle. That's protein, right? Testosterone makes hair grow. Proteins, okay? Cortisol, cortisone, aldosterone, estrogen, they're all steroids. They all activate protein synthesis by using this intracellular receptor. So if you do have a course pack and you have a blank near the bottom of page 4, lipid hormones diffuse into the target cell and bind an intracellular receptor. Okay, letter A down there. Lipid hormones diffuse into the target cell and bind an intracellular receptor. And that's I-N-T-R-A, intracellular receptor. So let's go back for just a moment. The nature of your plasma membrane dictates what types of hormones can come into your cell and what kinds must stay out. Because the phospholipid bilayer hates water and loves fat, what kinds of hormones can travel directly through into your cell?
Steroids.
Steroids, good. And of course, proteins are too big, so it's not even an issue of whether or not your cells like them. Proteins are large. They can't pass through, so they have to bind with the receptor that's sitting where? On the outside, right. So secondary messenger systems work for protein hormones. The receptor is outside the cell. Your hormone, does it behave as a first or a second messenger?
First.
What chemical inside your cell behaves as your second messenger?
Camp.
Good. Good. And then, of course, with steroids, steroids come into your cell. Where do they find the intracellular receptor? In the nucleus. Good. And what process do they turn on once binding the receptor?
Protein synthesis.
Good. All right. So I do want to make a note there. It's on your page. There's always exceptions, right? The exception to the rule is thyroxine. Okay, and it's actually a protein that works like a steroid. So odd, very strange that it works this way, but thyroxine's an exception to the rule. It's a protein hormone, but it uses direct gene activation just like a steroid would. How about questions so far? Is stuff making sense today? Okay. We'll probably make page 5 our last page. Are incredibly intricate in terms of their relationships with one another, and some hormones are what we consider to be permissive hormones. So let me give you an example. Sometimes women who struggle with fertility issues, maybe they have trouble getting pregnant, maybe they've gone and talked to their doctor and she has said, hey, you need to be on thyroid medication after they run a blood test. And you know, at first glance, you might think, well, thyroid doesn't have anything to do with female sex hormones. Maybe that's what I really need. Well, when we find out about the role of permissiveness that those thyroid hormones play, we realize that thyroid or thyroxine gives permission for sex hormones to do their job. So in reality, it may not be a sex hormone that's the problem for a woman who's trying to get pregnant. It may be a permissive hormone that says, hey, sex hormones, it's okay for you to do your job and to have your effect. So some women are put on thyroxine and get pregnant because they are now able to get their sex hormones to operate correctly. So when we talk about permissiveness, it means that one hormone gives permission for another hormone to do its job. One hormone has to give permission for another hormone to do its job. This is like being 8 years old, wanting to go to the movies, and you say, hey, Mom, I want to go to the movies. She is either going to take you to the movies or she's going to give you permission to go to the movies. So permissiveness means that a hormone has to say it's okay for another one to be effective. Hormones that work together, would you call them synergist or antagonist?
Synergist.
Good. What do antagonists do?
Work against.
Work against. Good. So we're going to come upon quite a few of these synergist and antagonist over the next few pages. Just your last thoughts for today are these three types of stimuli: humoral, neural, and hormonal. So you may wonder how an endocrine gland knows to release a hormone. Let me start with the easiest one here. If a nerve tells the gland to release a hormone, it's a nervous system stimulation. It's called neural stimulation. So, you know, if I scare you, you know, if you're excited, your nervous system will release epinephrine and norepinephrine. So that's a neural stimulation. That's probably the easiest one to understand. If another hormone tells a gland to release its hormones, kind of like passing the buck, right? Mom said for you to go clean your room. That's hormonal stimulation. One hormone tells another gland to make its hormones. This is what the pituitary does. It says, hey, thyroid, do this. The catch here is humoral is very similar sounding to hormonal. Keep in mind an old, very old term for blood and other bodily fluids is the humors. So humoral comes from that very old language where humors were things like bile and blood. We look at blood concentration being the driver behind humoral release of hormones. So things like blood calcium levels, blood sodium levels, blood glucose levels all drive certain glands to release hormones in response. I just wanted you to hear this because I'm going to start class on next Tuesday with this slide again. It's worth hearing one more time. And if you have any questions on direct gene activation or secondary messenger, we can go back and hit those too. Do y'all have any questions for today? All right, well, I will see you guys on Tuesday. Have a good weekend.